this talk actually continues exactly where Arkady left off. So he has already done a lot of the heavy lifting in motivating this work. So we're looking at latent sector errors. Latent sector errors refer to the situation where you have individual sectors on the drive that are not accessible. Some people refer to this also as media errors. And that's actually a situation that does happen in practice at a significant rate. The paper by NetApp, Sigmetrics 2007, that Arkady was also referring to, found that 3.5% of all the drives in their failures, in their failures in their study, had at least one latent sector error. For some models, this rate is actually as high as 7 to 9% of drives that are affected. So why is that a reason for concern? So how much of a concern latent sector errors really are depends on when you discover a latent sector error. If you are in a system that does not have any redundancy built in, like a non-RAID system, and you discover a latent sector error on a read, you actually cannot recover that data. So you have immediate situation of data loss. Even in a system that does have redundancy, if you, for example, look at a single parity RAID system, if you encounter a latent sector error during reconstruction, you can, again, not recover, so you have data loss. That's the reasons why we're concerned about latent sector errors, and the obvious question is, how do you protect against them? One of the key techniques is the one that Arkady also spent most of his time on, and that is periodic scrubbing. But basically, the idea is you continuously, slowly in the background, read the drive and make sure that you proactively and early detect and correct errors so you don't run into them in an inconvenient time like during RAID reconstruction. The second type of protection against latent sector errors, and that is a mechanism that's actually used by almost all file systems, is intra-disk redundancy, which basically means you have an additional level of redundancy inside an individual drive. That is, for example, done for metadata. A lot of file systems replicate the superblock. It has recently been suggested to add individual parity blocks for files. And there are also some systems that do actually add parity blocks for every group of individual sectors. So the question that we are trying to answer here is, how effective are those different protection schemes? And is there something in the characteristics of latent sector errors that we can use to maybe figure out how to better protect against them? And the way we're going to do that is to actually use real data from real production systems. This is a subset of the data that was used in the NetApp Sigmetrics study. So at this point, thanks to NetApp for sharing this data. Without it, this work would not have been possible. And I'll give you a quick overview of what this data actually looks like. So first of all, this is really a nice data set, and the reason is that it spans all of NetApp systems that were in the field at the time the study was done. That's more than 1.5 million drives. It's both SATA and SCSI drives. And another nice thing about this data is that all those systems do use a background scrubber, which means every single latent sector error will eventually be discovered, either by an application or by the scrubber. So the data covers 32 months, which is a pretty long period. It covers all the systems that were in the field at that time. In this work, I will focus only on the four most common SCSI models and the four most common SATA models. The information that is contained in this data set is, first of all, for each single latent sector error that happened in this time, the timestamp of when this error was detected, and the logical block number that was affected by this latent sector error. Now, one thing to note here is when talking about timestamps, this is the timestamp when the error was actually detected. It doesn't mean that this is actually the time when the error necessarily happened. What we do know, though, is because we have a scrubber in all of these systems, and the scrubber has a scrubbing period of typically 2 weeks, the real time of occurrence must have been within 2 weeks before the timestamp that's in our data. So that's the data. And the question we're trying to answer is, given real-world data, how effective are different protection schemes? And we're focusing on two different types of protection schemes, scrubbing and intra-disk redundancy. So starting with scrubbing, Arkady already has given good motivation. Why would you do scrubbing? The reason is really that you're trying to detect errors as early as possible so that you minimize the amount of time that an error is latent. And therefore, you reduce the probability that you will actually run into an error while you're doing RAID reconstruction and you're vulnerable. So how do you do scrubbing? The simplest and most obvious approach, and that's actually the approach that most systems today take, is you just do sequential periodic scrubbing, which means you slowly in the background, read the drive from the beginning to the end, and when you're done, you start all over again. Now, the question is, given that we have learned something about what latent sector errors look like and their characteristics, can we do any better than that? And one immediate idea would be, since we know there's temporal and spatial locality, why, instead of always scrubbing slowly in the background, once we find the first error, why don't we immediately accelerate our scrubbing and immediately scrub the error around it, rather than continuing at our slow background speed? That's what we call localized scrubbing. And that's an idea that you could also take to the extreme, where you say, rather than after encountering the first error, immediately scrubbing the area around it, immediately scrub the entire remainder of the drive. And that's what we call accelerated scrubbing. Now, one limitation of these approaches is, if you think about it, how are they trying to reduce the time that an error is latent? They really only focus on finding additional errors faster. They don't do anything about finding the first error quickly. And that's exactly the limitation that staggered scrubbing that Arkady talked about before focuses on. So staggered scrubbing is actually a really neat and intuitive idea, and I wish I had come up with this. What staggered scrubbing does is, it basically says, if you imagine your drive being divided up in several regions, and you have a burst of latent sector errors, because of locality, they're probably all centered in one of those regions. So what you're trying to figure out at any given scrub interval is really, are there any regions that have errors? And if so, which region is it? So rather than going through region by region by region sequentially, what you could do is take a bunch of samples from the first region, move on to the next region, move on to the next region. Once you do find errors, immediately at this point, scrub the entire rest of this region. And you could again take that to a more aggressive approach, and instead of just scrubbing the remainder of that region, scrub the entire remainder of the drive. Oops, I lost the animation here. So the question is, how do these approaches perform in practice? And by in practice, we mean when performed or simulated on real-world data. And the answer is actually in this graph here. And there are a couple of interesting trends here. One is that the two first approaches that actually seem quite intuitive, where you, once you find an error, you immediately scrub the error around, or you immediately scrub the remainder of the drive, perform pretty poorly. So what this graph shows you is, on the x-axis, the scrub interval, and on the y-axis, the percentage by which all these approaches reduce the mean time to error detection compared to a standard sequential scrubber. And what you see is that both accelerated scrubbing and local scrubbing are on the bottom of this graph, and they actually provide almost no improvement. And you might ask why that is. My suspicion is that, first of all, they don't reduce at all the time until you detect the first error. They only improve for follow-up errors. And also, they mostly improve for errors that are close in space to the first error. And even a standard sequential scrubber, because those errors are close in space, would get there pretty quickly. So the more interesting results in this graph are really in the top part, when looking at the two staggered policies. So what you see is that there's a 10 to 35% improvement in the mean time to error detection compared to standard sequential scrubbing. And this is actually even better than the original paper claims. So that was pretty nice to see. What is important to keep in mind here is these are improvements that are achieved without introducing any additional overheads. So there are no additional reads or writes necessary or anything. You don't introduce more work. Basically, you don't work harder, you just work smarter. You just reorder the same operations in a different way, and you win that way. Another question that we looked at is, and that is maybe one weakness of the staggered policies, you have now those parameters. You have the region size and the segment size that you have to somehow set. And what we found is, when experimenting with different configurations for these parameters, these policies are actually pretty insensitive to those parameters. So The results that I'm showing here are not the results that you get when you spend hours of fine-tuning those parameters. This is actually results that you get for pretty much all reasonable parameter configuration that we tried. So this seems to be an approach that might actually be pretty easy to implement in practice and gives you significant gains. So moving on to the second type of protection schemes. And that's intradisk redundancy. So why would you ever want to do intradisk redundancy? There are really several situations where that's an interesting approach. One is if you have a system that does not have any other form of redundancy, like a single disk system, where every latent sector error basically means you have data loss. But also in a RAID 5 single parity RAID system, this could be interesting, because in those systems, if you are reconstructing, again, a latent sector error actually means data loss. So the question we want to answer is, what is really the protection potential that those intradisk redundancy schemes offer you? And we will talk qualitatively about the overheads of the different schemes. Our focus is really what fraction of latent sector errors that you see in the field could be recovered if those systems had intradisk redundancy. So how do you do intradisk redundancy? The simplest thing you can do, and that's actually something that a lot of today's storage systems do, is what I call single parity check scheme, where you simply take a bunch of data sectors, say K sectors, and you tag on one parity sector in the end. What this means is you can now lose any one of your K data sectors and you can recover it because you have redundancy. You cannot recover more than one data sector though. So if you have two latent sector errors in this group, you cannot recover. And what we wanted to know is basically, out of all the errors in those data sets that we have, could be recovered if we had intradisk redundancy in this form, single parity check SPC. And what we found is basically good news and bad news. The good news is that more than half of all drives, all the errors could be corrected with a single SPC scheme. The bad news is that there are still about 25 to 50% of drives left that do have errors that SPC could not recover, meaning there were multiple errors in one of those parity groups, which brings up the question, should we maybe consider stronger schemes? And an immediate worry, of course, when looking at stronger intradisk redundancy schemes is stronger schemes mean you need additional parity. Additional parity means you have to actually update more parity on every update. So is this something that would actually ever be interesting in practice? And I think there are some environments where this might be interesting. One is, for example, archival systems. Archival systems are systems where you write once and there are really no updates afterwards. Moreover, archival systems are systems where scrubbing is not always desirable because scrubbing means you actually have to power on the system to perform the scrub. So that might be interesting. If you have workloads that are read mostly, so you don't have updates and you don't pay the overhead of updating your parity, that would be one such system. Or you could just use intradisk redundancy selectively for critical data on your drive, such as metadata. So if you wanted to use stronger schemes than just a simple K data sectors plus one parity sectors, how would you go about that? When looking at the literature, we actually found one scheme that has recently been proposed by some folks at IBM that seemed very interesting. This scheme allows you to tag on M redundant sectors to K data sectors, where both of these are variables you can tune. And the interesting feature was that this scheme still requires only one parity update per data update, and it trades off some form of protection in that it allows you to recover only up to M consecutive errors. So you cannot recover any M sectors, but you can recover up to M consecutive errors. And that might exactly be what you need for latent sector errors because they have all this spatial locality, so maybe errors usually occur in bursts, so being able to recover M consecutive errors might be good enough. So what makes this system really interesting, it's called interleaved parity check, IPC, is that the claim in the paper that proposed this system is actually that it provides protection that's as good as MDS. MDS are maximum distance separable codes. It's basically erasure codes, think of with Solomon. These are the gold standard of coding theory because those do allow you to recover from up to M sector errors within your K plus M errors. So rather than being able to recover only up to M consecutive errors, you can lose any M sectors here. So how good is IBC really in practice, and how close does it get to what MDS can offer you? And it turns out the results were surprising and maybe somewhat disappointing. So based on our evaluation of those schemes on the real data, what we see is IBC, unfortunately, is a lot weaker than MDS. And it's, in fact, not even significantly stronger than SPC, the single parity scheme with just one parity sector in the end. And one might wonder, why is that, since the original paper finds this is really as good as MDS is? And I think the answer is the difference between using simulation models and using real-world data. So in the original paper, what was done is they put together a statistical model, which seems very intuitive. But when taking a closer look at the data in this model, there are just a few key characteristics that aren't modeled properly. So what this tells us is basically it's really important to use real-world data. And you probably saw that also when you looked at the previous paper and how much effort they went through to reverse engineer basically the NetApp data based on the pictures in the Sigmetrics paper. So what we're trying to do in this paper is to provide models and the results for all the parameters and distributions that we fitted to the data. So you can look at those in the paper, and I'll not go into too much detail in those. So what is the implication of those findings here? One implication is that if you do want stronger intradisk redundancy than the simple single parity add-on gives you, you might have to look at schemes that have a little bit more overhead. You could, for example, look at schemes that require for every individual data sector more than one parity sector to be updated. One possible idea, and we went through this as a thought experiment in the paper, is we kind of know how to do that. We know how to move from one parity to two parities. We know that from moving from RAID 5 to RAID 6. So maybe we can use the same ideas, basically adapt RAID 6 codes, such as the RDP code by NetApp, and adapt those for intradisk redundancy. And we've tried that, and the initial results look pretty interesting. So maybe that's something to consider further. And I don't have time to go into details, but again, they're in the paper. So this was, so far, just a high-level summary of some of the results that we found when trying to evaluate those different protection schemes for latent sector errors. There are really a lot of questions in practice when you are trying to protect against latent sector errors that are left open and that I want to spend some time on to try and answer based with based on the real data. One simple question is, at any given time, what level of protection should you choose? For example, scrubbing allows you to vary the rate, so even after you've decided which scrubbing scheme you want to use, there's still the question of how often should you scrub. And really the answer to that question depends on how does the probability of errors change over time. So we went back to the data, and we tried to answer exactly that question. Is there a way to predict future errors based on past errors? We know from the NetApp paper that having one error increases the probability of having additional errors, but can we make more precise predictions? That's exactly what we attempt to do in this plot. This plot shows you as a function of the number of errors that you have seen in the past, what is the probability that you will see future errors? And what you see is that there's a very clear correlation. So the more errors you have seen in the past, the more errors you will see in the future. What is also quite interesting to note, actually, is that there's a distinct jump moving from one to two errors. So once you have seen two errors, we're actually a lot more likely to see more errors rather than at the point when you have seen only one error. And the other interesting observation, I guess, is these numbers vary quite a bit by disk model. So each of these graphs corresponds to a different disk model, and the difference can be 60 to 70% between the different models. And you can actually do the same for trying to predict not only the probability of future errors, but the number of future errors. So what the graph on the right here shows you is, as a function of how many errors you have seen already, how many errors do you expect to see in the future? And again, there's a very clear correlation. how high the numbers of future errors are really depends on the disk model. But there was, for example, some models where, you know, once you have seen 10 errors, in expectation you will have 100 more errors. So what this tells us is, if you have seen many previous errors, you are likely, you're more likely to see future errors. You're also more likely to see a higher number of future errors. So what does this mean for protection? It means, first of all, you should adapt your protection, for example, your scrub rate or your inter-disk redundancy scheme based on previous errors you have seen. What it also means, and that is sometimes hard to do in practice, you really need to know what kind of disk model you're dealing with and how the error behavior for that particular model looks like, because the answers really vary for different models quite a bit. So this basically tells you, as a function of how many errors you have seen, what is your likelihood of seeing future errors. The problem with this is maybe you don't always want to wait until you've seen many errors to conclude that you will see many more errors. So another question would be, how soon do you know that you are likely to see a larger number of future errors? Or asking this differently, can you already say after the first scrub interval when you found errors, after the first error, can you make predictions at that point in time how many more errors you're likely to see and how likely it is to see more errors? So basically what we're trying to use is the one piece of information that you have after the first scrub interval that has errors, and that is how many errors did you see in the first scrub interval? And we're trying to predict from there how much more likely you are to see more errors. So what the graph here shows you as a function of the number of errors that you find in the first scrub interval, what is the expected number of errors that you expect to see in the future? And again, what you see is there's a pretty clear correlation. So after the first scrub interval, based on the number of errors you have seen, you have a pretty good idea of how many errors you are expected to see in the future. So in addition to just predicting how many errors you are in expectation seeing, what you might also want to know is what is the probability of future errors. And that's actually interesting, because if you try to predict the probability of future errors based on previous errors, that's actually not such a strong correlation at all. So looking at the number of errors in the first scrum interval allows you to predict how severe future error events will be. It does not necessarily allow you to conclude anything about the probability of future events. So one question, and that also goes back to being adaptive about your protection schemes. One question is, once you have an error, for how long do you have to be extra cautious? So a disk that has some errors, is it vulnerable for the entire remainder of its lifetime, or can you at some point stop being overly careful? And that's exactly what this graph tries to answer. It shows you, as a function of the number of weeks that have passed since you have seen the first error, what is your current error probability? And what you see is that, first of all, initially, this probability is very high. Actually, the scrub interval that follows the first scrub interval that had errors has a probability of 10 to 20% to also find errors. But then this probability actually drops off exponentially. What you might not see is this is actually log scale on the graph. So error probabilities do drop off exponentially, which means if you want to adapt your protection scheme, it is important to react to the first errors you see, but over time, you can actually safely taper them off. So there are a bunch of more questions that remain unanswered. So what I've talked about right now is really what level of protection to use when. Another question is what level of protection to use where, or asking it differently, are different parts of the drive equally likely to have errors? Or should we maybe do schemes adaptively on where on the drive you're looking at? And that's actually quite interesting, and that's an observation I'm curious to hear other people's opinion on as well. So what this graph here shows you is, as a function of the fraction of the drive, what fraction of errors are concentrated in that part of the drive? So for example, the data point here, at 10% fraction of the drive, means if you take the lower 10% of the logical block number space, that's how many errors are concentrated there. And if you look at the y-axis, you actually see that in the bottom 10% of the logical block number space, you find about 20 to more than 50% of all errors. And you find the same when you look at the end of the drive. And you also see distinct spikes throughout the graph for some of those models. So what this really means is there are some errors of the drive that seem to be more likely to develop latent sector errors. So maybe you should use different protection schemes for those, scrub them more frequently, and maybe don't put your most important data into those areas. And one open question is, what really causes this higher rate of errors in those parts of the drive? And that is especially a relevant question when you look at scrubbing. So one concern about scrubbing, and when talking about adaptively adjusting the rate of scrubbing, is could scrubbing actually introduce new errors? Disks are mechanical devices, so if you increase the number of operations, does this mean that you potentially wear out your drive earlier and introduce additional errors? So unfortunately, the NetApp data did not have any information on workload in there. So I used some data that I collected at Google. That's data in one data center, more than 10,000 drives. And the data tells you how many latent sector errors there were, how many reads, and how many writes per drive. And I tried to come up with a correlation between number of reads, number of writes. And you can take a guess. I have asked a lot of people. I got a lot of different answers. I think the most common was that writes should be somewhat correlated with latent sector errors. Reads maybe not so much. So here's what I found in the data. It really didn't matter which way I sliced it or diced it. There was no correlation between the number of reads and latent sector errors. There was no correlation between number of writes and latent sector errors, which maybe means you don't have to be too worried about increasing your scrub rates and increasing the number of operations on your drive. But it's really something that I would like to take a closer look at with maybe some other data set and verify that. Some other questions that remain unanswered is, what is the most common distance between errors? Because if you know what the common distance between errors is, you can, for example, make sure that you don't place replicas of data at those particular distances. And that's exactly what this graph here shows. It tells you what is the probability that within a certain distance from an error, you see another error. And the first observation, and that was already in the NetApp paper, is you have a really high probability of finding a sector very close by at a distance of about 10 sectors. You have a chance of 20 to 60% of seeing other errors. One thing that's interesting, though, is that there are a couple of other bumps in this graph. And those bumps tend to be consistent for different types of models, for models of the same family. So could be that those bumps are due to disk geometry. Unfortunately, I don't have that information about drives available, but that would be one interesting thing to actually investigate. So what this means is avoid placing replicas at really close distances or at those distances that tend to have a higher probability of errors for your drive. This result also explains why a single parity inter-disk redundancy scheme is not always successful, because a large number of errors are actually really close to each other within 10 sectors, and they affect the same parity group. There are lots of other questions that are answered in the paper that I'm not going into. One is, for example, does errors being close in space also mean that they're close in time? The answer is yes. A bunch of other questions in the paper that we are answering that I'm not going to talk about here. So to conclude, what we did is we evaluated the potential of different protection schemes. We looked both at scrubbing and at inter-disk redundancy. For scrubbing, we found that a recently proposed scheme, staggered scrubbing, is really successful. Inter-disk redundancy results showed single parity can recover all LSEs in about half to three quarters of all drives, but there remains a fraction where it's not successful. We looked at a number of characteristics of latent sector errors and tried to derive suggestions for protecting against latent sector errors. And we also went into modeling those latent sector errors. And I didn't talk about that in the talk, but we did fit distributions and we provide all the parameters in the paper. So if you ever want to work on simulating or modeling errors, you can get hopefully useful parameters from there. And at this point, I would like to thank, first of all, NetApp for sharing this data and all of you for listening. Are there any questions that I can take?
Wen Guangwang from Ample. So in one of your slides, you showed that at the beginning of the disk, there are a lot more error happens.
Yes.
I think for many file systems, they store metadata at the beginning of the disk.
Yeah.
And also when the driver is not full, the data is at the beginning of the disk. So do you think that's because the beginning of the disk is used a lot more often than other parts? Or do you have data to prove or disprove this?
That is a very good question. And that's exactly the suspicion that I had initially, that it might be usage that makes some parts of the drive more likely to have errors than others. And that was the main reason that I did actually want to have additional data on workload and correlate with workload. Based on the data that I looked at Google, there's no correlation that I could find whatsoever. It's still something I would like to look at in a different data set. There are possible other explanations for why the bottom half or the bottom 10% of the logical block number space might have higher errors. So one thing, for example, that I've been told is that often the bottom 10% of the logical block number space is mapped to outer tracks on a drive because those give you higher throughput. The problem is the outer tracks on a drive might also have more vibration. So there could be other reasons as well.
Ethan Miller, UC Santa Cruz. First of all, I like the work in the paper, and actually I had one question about the section that studied MDS codes, since we actually used MDS codes in our archival storage system in 2008. And the question I had is, if you had, it looks like you're adding more parity blocks by having longer stripes, but given that the errors are clustered, isn't there some maximum number of errors you might get in a region of the disk and just say, make the region longer and include a fixed number of MDS parity blocks? Did you look at that as an alternative? In other words, given that errors are clustered, and I agree they are, how many MDS blocks would you need in, let's say, 250 to make errors go away?
Yeah, that's a... So definitely making your data and parity sectors spread out more does help, but what we saw in our simulations is actually it helps even if you stay within a closer region and you just use smarter schemes. So doing a simple, what the IPC people suggested, being a little bit smarter about how you map data to parity sectors doesn't really help, but if you're willing to accept that you have to update two parity sectors for one data sector, you can, even with pretty small regions, get as close to something like MDS, for example. And MDS, by the way, doesn't need very large regions to protect. So if you would be able to tolerate any M out of your K plus M sectors to be lost, relatively small regions, so I'm talking about maybe 80 sectors are already enough. You don't need to go much beyond that.
Right, so for archiving, that's exactly what you want to do because you write it once and it sits there forever, so I agree with that.
Exactly.
Completely. Yeah.
That's exactly why I mentioned archiving as one of the motivations, where you don't care about updates, but you do care probably about storage efficiency.
Exactly.
Hi, Jason Rash from CleverSafe. Your results seem to suggest that interleave parity approaches are doomed to fail due to how correlated and localized latent sectors are on individual disks. Do you think it makes more sense to address latent sector errors with MDS applied across disks rather than across sectors?
Yes, and that's essentially what RAID does. Right? If you move from RAID 5 to RAID 6, in some sense, that's what it does for you. So I think so. I haven't done the analysis, but that's actually some part of future work. It would be interesting to compare what is the probability of losing data due to latent sector errors in a RAID 5 plus some intra-disk redundancy compared to a RAID 6 system?
Thank you.